on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Hi there, and thank you for joining us on this chilly Sunday night across the nation. And if you're listening elsewhere in the world via the web, a warm welcome to you all. Our web address for both live listening and downloading a podcast of the program is www.abc.net.au/sundaynights. That's more important to tonight because part of the program will be broadcast only on the web as we cross at some stage to the cricket. For those of you Test cricket fans, yes, it will be coming up. As I said, a somewhat shortened hour this or couple of hours this evening. But you can keep listening to the growing audience on the web, and I'll give you the address again shortly. Over recent months, a legacy program of the Howard government has been taken up by an increasing number of schools around the country. It's the National Chaplaincy Program. Traditionally, Australian government schools have been guided by a settlement over issues of religion that took place in the 1880s. In order to avoid costly sectarian rivalries, most Protestant churches agreed that religion in state schools would be supplied by the churches to specific religious education periods, available on a voluntary opt-out basis as part of the normal curriculum. Hence, religion was kept off the state payroll, because those providing the RE classes came from the churches, and kids, if they wanted to opt in or opt out, could bring a letter from mum or dad. Now, some are suggesting the guidelines of the chaplaincy program, as it has evolved in Australian schools over the last 12 months or so, are being interpreted in such a way as to subvert the intention of the original Education Act and to open students up to religious proselytisation, with the authority and weight of the school behind it. Well, that's our discussion this evening. In a few moments' time, we'll be joined by Democrat Senator Lynn Allison, who raised the issue in Senate estimates last week, and we'll also be joined by some other participants in different sides of that debate. You can also join us if you have an opinion. Our open line, 1300 800 222, 1300 800 222, on Sunday nights on ABC Radio around Australia. So, let us begin with a song. And here's Van Morrison, Keep It Simple.
So there's a feeling, feeling deep within. Soul is not the color of your skin. Soul is the essence that sends from within. It is where everything begins. Soul is what you've been through, what's true for you, where you're going to, what you're gonna do. Soul is your station, all the folk of your nation. Something that you wear with pride. Soul can be your vision, or something that is hidden. It's not something that you gotta hide. Something that you just can't hide.
That's Van Morrison from his latest album, Keep It Simple. The song is called Soul. Exile Records are putting it out, so you might want to grab that. Now, a little correction. We've just been notified that we're going to the cricket a little early this evening. We're going at 11:30, so instead of the interview with David Augsburger, we're going to replay an interview we did with Bishop Anthony Fisher. So if you're listening on the web, you can catch the whole of Anthony Fisher. If you're listening live on radio, you can catch the first part of it before we go to the cricket and then transfer over to the web if you wish. And Anthony Fisher, you say, who is he? He's the man in charge of World Youth Day for the Catholic Church, which is coming up, of course, in just a few weeks' time, and the Pope will be in Australia. But for now, our topic for the evening, the chaplaincy initiative of the Howard government, arose in response to widespread parental concern about the lack of moral and ethical guidance available to students in the state system. Undoubtedly, the initiative reflected real concerns among parents about the need for ethical direction and the realisation that such direction did not come value-free. So school councils have been given an active role in the selection of suitable candidates for chaplaincy posts. The guidelines have also been structured with the intention of avoiding the dangers of sectarian religious proselytising by particular groups. Well, after some months of operation, questions are now beginning to arise as to the nature of such chaplaincies. First, as to whether the old free, compulsory and secular boundary has been crossed and effectively eliminated from state school systems. And further, whether the guidelines for the chaplaincy program are adequate to protect students from proselytising by particular groups keen to impose their views on students and using the authority of the school to back it up. So to discuss the issue, we're joined by Democrat Senator Lynn Allison and the head of Scripture Union in Queensland, Tim Mander. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Lynn Allison, let me ask you, why did you raise this issue in Senate estimates in the most recent sitting?
Paul, I'll be pleased to answer that question, but I did want to pick up on something you said a little earlier, yep. Which was that parents were worried about values and the state school system not imparting those. Can I say that I'm pretty in tune with schools, with parent organisations, with principals, with teachers, and this is the first I've heard of parents themselves saying something must be done. Let me tell you, my view is that that the Prime Minister at the time, John Howard, saw this as an opportunity to worry parents about such issues as values, and that this was more political than based on substance or what parents were saying. But getting onto the question of why I ask these questions at estimates. For one thing, I think that there's a big problem with the program in that it doesn't allow schools to take advantage of this $20,000 which is on offer if they don't want a religious chaplain in their schools. In other words, if the schools, the parents, the teachers, the principal, the school community says, no, we're quite happy with our sons and daughters not having religious instruction or the presence of chaplains, but we really do think it would be worthwhile having someone to do counselling in our schools, they don't have that option. So for many schools, this carrot being dangled at them was too hard to resist because every school can do with another person on the ground to assist. So it's my view that this was quite a deliberate policy to shift chaplains into schools and that it had an ideological base to it. But I asked questions because another problem with the program was that chaplains were under no, or at least schools were under no obligation to appoint chaplains who had any qualifications in anything. And it's my understanding that some chaplains have not even completed year 12, let alone done any sort of courses that would allow them to be competent in dealing with the problems that children bring to them. So they're my main concerns. The discrimination against schools that don't want to have religious chaplains and the fact that these people are being let loose, to use a phrase, on children without having without having the prerequisites of counselling training, which I think is should be a minimum requirement. It's not enough just to know a bit about religion. By definition, if you're dealing with children, then you're counselling them, particularly as chaplains are painted as your friend in the playground. In other words, if you've got a problem, come and see the chaplain.
Chaplaincy is the issue we're discussing on Sunday night this evening. Our guest is Senator Lynn Allison of the Australian Democrats, who raised the question in Senate estimates in the past week or so. Also joining us in just a moment will be Tim Mander of Scripture Union in Queensland, one of the organisations who have taken advantage of the chaplaincy program, Scripture Union, for many years, associated with religious education in schools. But before we come to Tim Mander, Lynn Allison, there's just one other question I'd like to ask you about this. Is there concern, or are you sensing concern, that the guidelines are actually being misused? That is, there is a sense in which the guidelines are being used by groups to enable proselytisation to go on in schools?
Yes, in two respects. I think the guidelines are misused because it's almost impossible for a chaplain who is devoted to Christianity and the church and to a certain way of thinking about things to not wish to proselytise, because the whole point of being in schools is to win children over to a religious way of life. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I also think that the guidelines are being abused because the schools are supposed to be required by the Commonwealth to reach consensus about the need for a chaplain in their school. And certainly this is the case in Queensland, and I've heard that it's also the case in Northern Territory and New South Wales, that there are not adequate, if any, parental approval systems in place, and that this idea of consensus is not tested, and there are many parents who don't even know that chaplains are being used in schools to which their kids attend. So, John, I think it's there are ways that you can step around the guidelines that are there, and in some cases schools are simply ignoring those guidelines, and in the case of Queensland, it seems to be with the nod of the state government.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio Around Australia. John Cleary with you. My guest, Senator Lynn Allison. We'll now invite into the program as well Tim Mander from Scripture Union in Queensland. Tim Mander, just give us a little understanding of Scripture Union and their background before we get into the specifics of chaplaincy, because Scripture Union are known nationally as one of those groups who for many years have had a role in supporting religious education in schools. Is that the case?
Look, yeah, Scripture Union's been in this country and in my state for 70 or 80 years, and we've had a very long track record with working with young people and children and in a whole range of different ways. So we've worked in schools for that period of time, we've run camping programs, and as you say, we're a very credible organisation, not just in this country but internationally as well. We've been running the school chaplaincy program. We're not running the program, but been part of the program in partnership with schools for 20 years in this country, and I think that's in this state, and I think that's pretty important to know that school chaplaincy hasn't just begun because of the National School Chaplaincy Program. It's been running very, very successfully in this state and across the country as well, and I think that one of the reasons it's been that the NSCP funding was picked up so readily by so many schools in this state at least, was because of the program that we've been running and the model that we have, one that is totally acceptable to the schools and the education department and obviously by the parents as well.
Let's clear up a couple of definitional questions. As I understand it, historically, religion was taught in state schools through religious education classes, and that Scripture Union, under the mandate passed out by various denominations or ministers' fraternals or other bodies, could work in schools to provide direct religious education, specific religious education.
Okay, well, let's just clarify that, because that's not entirely correct. That has nothing to do with Scripture Union. That's a right that's given to the churches.
Yes, but they often use Scripture Union programs, do they not?
No, they don't. No, we're not involved in religious education as such. We've been involved in particular Christian activity in schools, but not specifically religious education.
So you would be running groups like the Interschool Christian Fellowship and those groups?
We'd run volunteer groups.
So these would be volunteer groups centred around the Christian faith?
That's correct.
And running worship services, Bible studies, whatever?
Well, I wouldn't call them worship services.
No, say Bible studies.
In a school context, but yeah. Meetings that that Christian children that identify themselves as Christians would be encouraged to come there and to be encouraged in their faith.
Yeah, so it's about encouraging people in the faith, essentially.
That's correct.
Yeah. Now, that seems to set up one of the threshold problems that Senator Allison and others are articulating here, that chaplaincy is not designed for that. It's designed to do something else.
It is, you're right. I mean, chaplaincy is for the spiritual and pastoral care of students in our schools. And there's very, very strict guidelines, as Senator Allison's already referred to, which says that you cannot proselytise or evangelise through school chaplaincy. Now, those guidelines haven't just come with the National School Chaplaincy Program. Those guidelines have been in place through the various education departments, again in this state, for 20 years. And that's something that we deeply respect, and something that we've developed a reputation of integrity about that. And to be quite honest, John, if you didn't conform to those guidelines, you simply would not last in a school context, because school principals and school's administration would not tolerate it. And I think, again, that our track record speaks for itself, that we've been working in schools with a chaplaincy program for 20 years, and it's a model that works and is successful and is appropriate, and it's that is very, very important.
The guidelines state that they're designed to avoid things like proselytisation, but also the role of a chaplain is to provide support and counsel to students. Would that be a more appropriate way of describing it?
No, we've got to watch this word counsel, because that's not accurate as well. Chaplains are not counsellors. They are not professional counsellors. And therefore they don't provide a professional counselling service.
See, this is where I begin to get into difficulties. If part of the definition historically of a chaplain, just leaving aside the school system, and Lynn Allison, I'll get you to comment first before Tim can have a line back here. If part of the definition of the word chaplain is somebody historically who provides support and counsel in times of crisis, how can you have a chaplaincy system in which a chaplain can't provide counsel? If the role of the chaplain, also a known religious person, is not to provide counsel, then surely the other side of that app, the word chaplain, the religious association, must come in to the picture as the major element. Yet the guidelines seem to want to minimise the religious role as well. So how can one effectively operate with guidelines that seem to want to hamper the chaplain on both definitional sides of what chaplaincy traditionally is? Now, Tim, before you have a go, I'll ask Lynn on this, because it does seem that the guidelines here are a little confusing.
Yes, well, you might ask yourself exactly what do chaplains do if they're not allowed to proselytise and talk about religion. And it's my understanding, John, that in many cases chaplains conduct prayers prior to various events, that they speak at school assemblies, and again, it's prayer, it's about, it's about religion. But if they're not doing that, and I think there's plenty of evidence that they are, then what form of communication is taking place if it isn't counselling? So I think I agree with you. There's a conundrum. You're not allowed to proselytise. You're not allowed to counsel. Well, what on earth are they doing?
Tim Mander, can you help us with this one?
Well, let me tell you what chaplains do. Look, and how they operate in my state. The chaplains form or join part of the caring network of a school. Now, in that caring network, there are people such as school nurses, there are people such as guidance officers, there's school-based policemen, there are often youth workers there, and there are also chaplains. Now, a chaplain is different from some of the other support staff in that they have no teaching load. They are seen as somebody independent of the authority structure of the school. Obviously, they're not, but they're seen that way. They are people that get outside into the school environment and mix with the kids and develop relationships with the kids. They are seen as someone who the kids can go to who will listen to them without judgment and help them make better choices, if that's the appropriate thing, or generally encourage and guide them to reach their potential.
Well, how is that not counselling?
Well, okay, well, it depends. I mean, we can get down to semantics to what counselling is. But, I mean, they are not formal councils as such. They don't form, you know, they don't have a series of meetings with kids over 4 to 6 to 8 weeks in a counselling type of situation. They would refer kids on to other professionals if that's what was required. Now, let's just talk quickly about the spiritual nature of the chaplains. Now, they are not allowed to proselytise or evangelise, but they are allowed to answer questions that kids have about spiritual issues. Now, believe it or not, kids in our schools are asking those types of questions. The questions like, why am I here? What is the purpose of life? Am I of any value in this life at all? But the difference is that the chaplain is not putting their agenda on the student. This agenda is driven totally by the student. Now, of course, the chaplain will, in an appropriate way, at times, if asked, talk to the child about what they believe. But that is not proselytising. It's simply grounding their faith and telling them, you know, how their worldview has been formed. But I think, again, we've got to understand that our kids aren't silly. They can, you know, they're very capable of making their own minds up and also very capable of investigating these type of issues themselves. But sometimes they want someone that they can go to that can help them on this journey. A total volunteer service.
Tim Mander from Scripture Union Queensland, one of our guests this evening on Sunday night, along with Senator Lynn Allison. We're talking about chaplaincy in schools, the way the program has been implemented. Is it in danger of transgressing the old boundary of free, compulsory and secular in state schools? Are parents fully aware of it? Is there anything wrong with the program, or is it a program that should be supported and encouraged around schools because of a direct and perceived need? You can join us, 1300 800 222. Tim Mander, hang on the line. We'll try and fix things up and get you back in a moment. Senator Lynn Allison, how do you respond to what Tim's just observed there?
Well, it's not my understanding of what's happening in school. Let me tell you that as a result of this getting into the public arena, I've had a number of school support workers contact me, and I've heard some horror stories. I've heard about children with suicide ideations being directed to chaplains who've attempted to solve some of those problems, which are effectively mental illness problems, because they argue that with God on our side, you know, we can deal with this. And
so you're suggesting they are going into direct proselytisation by route of counselling?
Direct counselling. Mm. And this support worker said to me that the more devout the chaplains are, the more they believe they can solve these very serious problems that some children have without referring them on to the appropriate person to deal with the issue. So I've become actually more worried since hearing about what's actually going on in schools with some chaplains. Look, I'm sure that some are fine people and they do a good job and there's not a problem. But as long as you are employing people with very few qualifications in our schools, this is the sort of thing which will happen. And there isn't any monitoring, at least not at the federal level. After my repeated questionings at various estimate sessions, we finally had Commonwealth public servants actually checking in schools whether the paperwork had been done. But nobody actually watches and listens to what's going on when chaplains are working directly with children. That's what worries me. It's the lack of professionalism. It's the ad hocery of all of this. And it's the whole notion that a child who would, or in secondary school, a young adult who will be seriously disturbed about some issue. They may have an eating disorder, they may have problems at home, they may have even an addiction. They may be pregnant. They may be. There are all sorts of reasons why teenage children face difficult situations, often that they can't even talk about with their parents. And if they're being directed to chaplains who have no qualifications in either youth work or in dealing with mental illness or the sorts of problems that arise, I think that we're looking for trouble.
Senator Lynn Allison on Sunday night. We've now been joined on the line by Senator Barnaby Joyce, who's called in. Barnaby Joyce, Senator Joyce, thank you for joining us. What would you like to observe?
Thanks for having me on your show. And I was just driving on the road, and sorry about this, Lynn, but I had to buy into this debate. Look, I think that there's also another passionate belief that's held out there, and that's a passionate belief in nothing, and that passionate belief in nothing is held as passionately as other people's belief in something. Now, I don't think that the chaplaincy is something that's compulsory. You can use it or you cannot use it. My experience of it here in Queensland is pretty positive. Schools were initially quite sceptical of it. They couldn't see the benefit of it, but now they've got it. They don't particularly want to lose it. I doubt very much whether anybody can just cruise into a school without some proper checks. I know that even being a good senator like Lynn, I need the appropriate, I think, blue card before I can wander around and just start chatting to people.
Just to check about whether you have a criminal record. It's got nothing to do with how good you are with counsel, whether you can counsel or whether you behave yourself appropriately in a school.
But what is the determinant of that, of whether you're the font of all knowledge, and is that by reason that you have a piece of paper saying so? I think that if there was obviously a incongruency between the chaplain and the school, that would be very soon weeded out. And I don't think we need a paternalistic approach to the school to start telling them how to do their business.
A key question, Barnaby Joyce, is this question of the guidelines themselves. They seem to be phrased in a way which discourages chaplains from engaging in counselling, but also discourages them from being engaged in specific religious education. So if they're not doing either of those, what are they there for?
Well, I think a lot of times that they're a section that's not specifically attached to the academic side of the school, and so that kids who have a problem do have, if they choose, another set of ears to listen to them, and I can't quite work out why there is a huge problem with that.
Yes, but wouldn't it be better if the guidelines simply said these people are there as representatives of religious faith and necessarily will both counsel and talk to kids about their religious faith? Because that's what they do, in fact.
Well, I've got no problems with people having a religious faith.
Neither do I. I'm just saying that the guidelines seem to be trying to step around it.
I think a lot of the times, though, the debate centres around the counter-argument of people wanting no religious faith, and that position is held as passionately and as fervently, in some extent, as a religious faith. In fact, the religion that they hold, and trying to avoid being oxymoronic, is a religion of passionately believing in no religion. And this is part of the cultural war, if you want a term for it, that is going on. Now, what this chaplaincy does is gives people choice. You can choose not to believe in anything. It's nothing compulsory. But if you choose to believe in something, there's an option to at least to start inquiring into that side of your life. And
yes, but
I think that's a very rich and wonderful part of your life, and why shouldn't you do
that? And why shouldn't you indeed? But at least the guidelines should be up front about that instead of being disingenuous the way they seem to be.
When someone says chaplaincy, I don't think there's anything disingenuous about the term chaplaincy. It's not like a person who might have an affiliation or might not. The word is chaplaincy, and I think that's self-evident of what a chaplain is.
Barnaby Joyce, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for that.
Lynn Allison, just a final response there to Barnaby.
Yes, well, I'm not sure about people who don't have religion being quite as passionate about it as those who do. I'm not sure where that fits with the argument, frankly. We have a lot of religious schools in this country, and if parents want to send their children to religious schools, they can do that. And a lot of the attraction of the public sector is that we don't mix religion with education. In some respects, religion is antithetical to some of the things that are taught in education, like science. So I think parents are entitled to, for instance, be you know, say that religion has no place in schools and that their children will not be involved. Now, when a chaplain is saying prayers at assemblies, when the chaplains are running camps, when they're intimately involved in the day-to-day procedures of schools, I don't know that you can guarantee that children won't be exposed. Now, you know, that's probably not the biggest danger, and I don't want to suggest that it is. My main concern is the lack of professionalism that is almost guaranteed by a program which says you don't need particular qualifications, and just what's going on between chaplains and kids. For the most part, it'll be harmless and it'll be even positive. I will acknowledge that, but I do worry about some of the programs being conducted by chaplains. Shine is one. Now, I've discovered that this is in a lot of schools that chaplains organised through Scripture Union are doing. And Shine is a Hillsong program where girls who are at risk, said to be at risk, are encouraged to be trained in makeup and nails and deportment and good manners and a whole range of things, which are, you know, not bad things in and of themselves. But we've gone well past the idea that self-esteem can be built by being pretty. I mean, that's not something that is useful for young women.
Tim Mander is back on the line now. So, Tim Mander, does Scripture Union endorse the Shine program in some schools?
Let's just make this clear as well about the Shine program. This program operates in many schools right across the country, in schools that have chaplains and schools that don't have chaplains. In fact, many teachers actually conduct this program. This program is not a spiritually based program, it's a values based program.
Is it supplied by Hillsong to Scripture Union and to those schools?
There is no relationship between Hillsong and Scripture Union. Now, I believe that they developed this program and they have sold licenses to particular organizations throughout the country to actually provide this. So some chaplains, as I said, and also some teachers use this program, but to simplify it to the extent that Senator Allison has, to say it's about being pretty and that will make you feel better, is absolutely ridiculous.
You just have to go to the website to see what is in the Shine program, and that's what it's all about.
Deportment and grooming is a small component of Shine.
Nevertheless, Tim Mander, Hillsong teaches and preaches a particular form of Christian values that many churches, broadly based Christian churches, would profoundly disagree with. There have been a number, whether or right or wrong, and I'm not getting into that issue, however, there have been a number of assertions about Hillsong over the years. Don't you think it's reasonable that parents would know this if their children are participating in such programs?
And exactly right, and that's what happens. So every student that participates in a program like Shine or any program run by a chaplain, there must be parental permission. So the school has approved it, and the parents must approve it, and obviously the kids themselves must want to be part of the program. And that is the case with every program that's run in a school by a chaplain, is that parental consent is required. So again, I just cannot see the issue, and it's a very much an oversimplification, because there are programs like Shine. There are tens of programs being used in schools that emanate from different organisations, obviously all of them with different values. But this program, plus many other, are obviously values that are accepted by the parents and accepted by the school and the education department.
Shouldn't that be a concern to parents, though? Because in a sense you're conceding exactly what Lynn Allison's concerns are, that schools are stopping teaching, or not stopping, but they are allowing to be taught things that would not traditionally fit in a state school curriculum, and that is receiving through the chaplaincy program the imprimatur of the school, rather than in the old system, the old ISCF system. The kids went off to their own little worship groups or study groups, and under the RE system they worked knowing that they were working with specific denominations within specific classes. This way seems a lot more messy and unclear.
But, John, it's not a spiritual-based program.
But it is, by definition. That's the problem. That's the conundrum, isn't it? That your chaplaincy is, by definition, spiritual. That's the point Barnaby Joyce was making.
Because the chaplain is running the program, therefore it's inferred that there's a spiritual component to it.
Absolutely. That's why churches are involved in it.
Okay, well, that's not the inference that parents get from it, because they actually know what the program is about.
What does the word chaplain mean? What does the word chaplain mean, Tim?
Yes, but a chaplain is not confined to that particular role. They participate in a whole range of activities that are helping kids through different issues and deal with things like self-esteem and other social issues that they have. I just think that's an incredibly unfair criticism to put on the chaplain.
It's not a criticism, it's observation about language. Lynn Allison.
Yes, look, and my sources tell me, John, that in schools, chaplains are being used for all sorts of things, that they are being utilised in very generalist ways. I've heard of them being involved in management sessions with kids who might be acting up. I've heard of them, you know, supervising schoolyards. It seems to me that they are there as a helping hand for the school where they need it. And, you know, you then have to ask the question, well, are they the most well-trained people for this kind of task?
We're taking some calls on Sunday night. Our guests are Tim Mander and Lynn Allison of the Australian Democrats and Tim Mander of Scripture Union in Queensland about chaplaincy in schools and the way it's being interpreted and used. You may be for or against, or just have some general concerns and questions. Give us a call, 1-300-800-222. We talked to Jed in Toowoomba in Queensland. Hello, Jed, welcome to the program. What would you like to say?
I'm a retired minister of religion, and before I came to Australia in the 60s, I served as a chaplain in one of the big hospitals in the big city in the United States. And there were certain ethos taught, certain ethics taught you when you were with an atheist. Your job was to understand their view of life and help them work from their view of life, whatever they were facing. And same with a Catholic, or same with you didn't have a certain view. And I came to Australia in the 60s, and I've been involved in some of the committees in Queensland who have been, you know, having interviews for chaplains. And in general, I'm not sure if this is a completely honest thing, because one, Scripture Union represents a certain wing of the church with an, you know, idea of making the big decision for Jesus. And when I did talk to the one of the people who finally became the chaplain of the school, you know, his thing was, I'm going to tell them what I believe. You know, that's and he became sort of kind of an evangelist on the campus, and mainly they come from a certain wing of the church that are more Hillsongy, they're more you know, revivalist, I always wonder how many Roman Catholics, for instance, are chaplains in school. That'd be very interesting to know. You know, how do you deal with someone who's grown up in a sacramental system, who sees themselves as a Christian through baptism, for instance? You've got to understand other people's where they're coming from to be, I think, a good chaplain. So that's my really concern with it. I think, in a way, John Howard's given a certain wing of the church a carte blanche to get into schools.
Jed, thanks for your observations. Tim Mander, a response.
Scripture Union is an employing authority for chaplains, the major employing authority in Queensland. It's an interdenominational organisation, and I can tell you that out of the 470 chaplains that we have, they basically come from every Christian denomination there is. We have total cooperation with all the major churches, and again, I think one of the reasons that we are the dominant player as an employing authority is because the churches in general are very happy with the model that we provide.
Tim, what's the aim of Scripture Union? What's its stated purpose?
Well, Scripture Union is an evangelical organisation. It's to bring God's good news to young people and children. But again, you know, you need to understand that we can operate and do operate in an education system We have done that for 20 years in an appropriate manner. Now, our motivation is to help young people and children. The same motivation that many church organisations have had for centuries and centuries.
Sure, and one isn't arguing that. One is talking about the way one conforms to the guidelines as laid down.
That's correct.
And that's the difficulty, isn't it? The guidelines themselves seem to be pushing you both ways at the same time.
Well, we're not finding any difficulty with it, nor are school principals.
Is that because the guidelines provide enough wriggle room?
No, because they're quite clear. What the guidelines are trying to do is protect the school system and students from exactly what I think Senator Allison is worried about. That is somebody coming in to proselytise, to openly evangelise, and try to move somebody's faith position.
And you don't think Shine fits within that?
No, absolutely nothing to do with the spiritual base. That's a value-based system, and I would encourage you to find out more about the program before we continue to hear these ill-informed comments about it.
Lynn Allison.
Well, I only know what I read on the website about Shine, and as I said, it seems to me to be not about values, or at least about questionable values, quite frankly, because I think if we're talking about valuing young girls because of their looks and their deportment and so forth, then that's the wrong kind of value to be talking about. So I haven't noticed anywhere else on the website other parts of the program that would appear to overcome this major problem with Shine being, as I say, about tapping into girls' notions of what they look like. Now, I can understand girls actually quite enjoying it. You know, girls love makeup and they love, doing their nails and so forth, and they probably enjoy it. But to couple that with notions of self-esteem, I think is hugely problematic.
Let's take a call from Hugh Wilson in Queensland. Hugh, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Now, you had some observations about the chaplaincy program.
Yes. Look, I'm part of a group called the Fourth R. We've got a website up on the web called the Fourth R, and anyone can go and have a look at it. We've been battling Education Queensland here in Toowoomba since 2006, not just on chaplaincy, but on religious instruction. But in relation to chaplaincy, our experience here in Toowoomba at quite a few schools is that Minister Gillard's department, who looks after the funding, simply do not police the paperwork. And Senator Allison is quite right to question Minister Gillard's department's activities. We also know from many emails over a long period of time that Education Queensland make almost no effort whatsoever to police the RI or the chaplaincy program. And I've heard Tim talking about Shine and denying that it was anything to do with spiritual activities. It is almost impossible, if you go to the Hillsong webpage, to find out any details about Shine beyond what Senator Allison says. She's absolutely correct. You can go to the Russian website in Kiev and learn more about Shine, where it is clearly about making girls pretty, dutiful, subjects of their husband, and roughly it says princesses fit for the king, and they're not talking about Elvis. Now, my son's school, I'll just read you the chaplaincy consent form. Tim's right, you have to sign a consent form. But our high school has sent us absolutely no information whatsoever about what's in Shine. But if I sign the chaplaincy consent form, this is all it says. Shine program. This is a girls' program aimed to boost self-esteem and confidence. It is run by volunteers, mostly from the Toowoomba City Church. This is run during lunchtime. Now, the Toowoomba City Church is a high-octane evangelical church of the AOG variety. And if you go to their webpage, under the Women's Mission section, it's all about Shine and City Chicks and various other programs. And it is clear from reading their webpage that Shine is step one in a progression of grooming young, vulnerable students, is the term that Rod Welford, our Minister of Education, uses, grooming them into into a conversion through Shine, Shine Girl, Shine Camps, and here in Toowoomba, City Chicks and various other things.
Tim Mander, that does seem to be fairly direct.
Well, look, again, all I can say about this program, like every other program that's run by a chaplain or is run by the school, is that the parents are totally informed about the content of the program.
Not from what Hugh Wilson is saying.
That is not true.
It is okay. True, and you know, I mean, this. I'm used to being met with lies and obfuscation from Education Queensland, but we are on the air. Now, unless you actually know about these schools in Toowoomba, I suggest you back off and find out tomorrow, because there are three state high schools in Toowoomba, and I've got friends who are parents at all of them, and I'm a parent at one of them. None of us have been given information about Shine. None of us have been consulted about the introduction of the federally funded chaplain. None of us have seen the chaplaincy work plan, and it is only because the fourth R in this town has forced Education Queensland to force principals to publish some of this information that any of it is on the website. And there's one school here in town, one high school, where there's nothing on the website. And I was talking to a parent today where they had to squeeze the minutes of the local chaplaincy committee out of the principal. This is hidden stuff. And I'm sure Scripture Union is not responsible for that, because you can't be. This is a school thing. But if you're in partnership with the schools, then you have a responsibility to make sure that the schools run openly and honestly, and they are not.
Hugh Wilson, thanks for your observations. We will have to move on. Tim, you had a chance to respond to you. Lynn Allison, have you got a brief word on what you had to say before we move on?
I'll just pass on the message that was given to me by this student support worker. She said she saw the posters that were produced by some girls doing Shine, and they were all about how good it would be to be skinny, movie stars, the kind of imagery rich and ideas which are really discouraged amongst young girls who are in a tricky situation in terms of attitude and motivation and, you know, whatever is going on in their lives. So it's a very old-fashioned notion of improving young people's self-esteem and quite a dangerous one. I think if you talked with a child psychologist or an educationalist, they'd actually be quite worried about that as a movement.
We're joined on the line now by Dr. Yvonne Patterson of Access Ministries in Melbourne. I understand Access Ministries is the new name for the old Council for Christian Education in Schools. Yvonne Patterson, welcome to the program. What would you like to say, just briefly?
Hi, John. It's good to be on the program, and it's good to be here to hear chaplaincy being discussed, because obviously I'm very supportive of it, and I think it's making a wonderful impact in our schools.
There does seem to be, though, tension between the notion of Christian education on the one hand, which chaplaincy discourages, yet the notion that chaplains can be in schools for a purpose that is not religion or counselling.
Well, our chaplains are there to share the love of Christ and to model it. I think that's entirely Christian, but we're very aware of the situation that we're in, that it's a secular situation. We're not there to force our faith on young people, but we are there to care for them, love them, and I would have thought that was very Christian.
Yes, but the that takes us right into the centre of the conundrum, doesn't it? Do you think there is a problem with the guidelines, the way they're phrased?
No, I think they're good guidelines. And I think they've been well thought out. I guess if I was beginning with a blank sheet of paper, perhaps I would have written them differently. I'm not sure of that, but they're the guidelines we have, and my role is to implement them. But you've got to remember, Victoria's been in the business of having chaplains since 1955. So this isn't new to us, being involved in state schools and providing a program that's there to support kids in the best of ways. And I mean, I would have thought, when you think about it, you know, so many of our reforms in, you know, welfare have come through a Christian presence. And we only have to think of the Earl of Shaftesbury and the Children's Factory Acts, or William Wilberforce and slavery. So I think it's quite appropriate that we're in schools doing good things for young people.
Yvonne Patterson, thank you very much for your observations. Lynn Allison, we've only got about 30 or 40 seconds left. Give us a 30-second summary of your position.
Well, my position is that I'm not opposed to chaplains per se, but I do think that those people that we allow to have access to our children in schools need to be very special, and they need to have proper qualifications, and their parents certainly need to know exactly what they're doing.
Tim Mander, last words.
Chaplaincy has been successful in many schools and state schools for many years, and that's because it actually works. Principals want it, kids want it, teachers want it, parents want it.
Last words from me. Chaplaincy in schools, an ongoing issue, I think, until the guidelines are clarified. Inadequate qualifications and perhaps deliberately obscure guidelines as to what it's on about, religion or counselling or neither. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia. John Cleary with you. Coming up soon, the news.